You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
How's it going, everybody? Welcome back to Locked On Rockets, your home for podcast coverage of the Houston Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. We're now just 2 weeks away from the opening of Rockets training camp for the 2017-2018 season, and while I think for everyone in Houston that's pretty good news with the way the Texans and Astros have played of late, we learned today that the 26th will be the opening of camp, and the 25th will be media day. That's when those of us in the media get to speak with Daryl Morey, Mike D'Antoni, along with a handful of the star players, certainly James Harden and Chris Paul, about their outlook for the upcoming season and what their goals are. Will Carmelo Anthony be with them? We'll have to wait and see. As I've said for really 2 months now, ever since July, it's going to take a deadline to see what actually happens the last 3 or 4 days before that deadline. And the Knicks open camp on the 25th, the Rockets open camp on the 26th. So is there going to be movement on the Carmelo Anthony front towards a deal? I think we'll have to wait until the midpoint of next week, maybe even later next week, to see if talks pick back up. For now, we're kind of in that slow point in the calendar, but we can at least see light on the other end of the horizon, because we do know now that we are 2 weeks away, as I record this on Tuesday evening, September 12th, from training camp being officially open for your Rockets. And, well, we're barely over a month removed from mid-October when the Rockets open up the season in Golden State on ring night for the Warriors. So things are getting very close. We're still a little short on news at the moment, because with it being so close to the NBA season but not quite there, for most players in the NBA, this is the last few weeks that you truly get with your family before you're officially committed to the team. Now, when you're a true star, certainly Chris Paul, James Harden, I think there's an extra emphasis on a season like this, and we've seen their commitment all offseason to playing together, knocking off any rust, any chemistry issues in advance. And this week, not only are they playing together, conveniently, they're also in New York playing with a certain Hoodie Mello back in one of those gyms in New York where, of course, Carmelo's been, but a handful of other NBA players as well. But certainly, I think it helps. It certainly can't hurt from the standpoint of making sure that Carmelo's list remains firm on Houston. And, of course, if Carmelo stands set on Houston only, then that greatly limits the options the Knicks have. And, of course, the likelihood of him going elsewhere is next to nothing if he stands firm on the Rockets being his only destination he would waive his no-trade clause for. So having Chris and James in New York, I certainly don't think it hurts, and it might very well help if there's any insecurity at all about Carmelo blinking rather than the Knicks the closer we get to training camp, because certainly towards the end of next week, I do think we'll start to get a sense of the momentum, whether it's positive or negative. We'll finally get a sense of what may happen once we finally get closer to that deadline, or, well, pseudo-deadline of the opening of camp, 25th for the Knicks and 26th for the Rockets. But for now, we basically sit and wait. We do have the Twitter videos, it seems like, every day from New York, and those are fun. But by and large, from a Carmelo rumor standpoint, from anything else going on with the Rockets, media availability, we're all waiting until the 25th or 26th. So in the absence of real news, it is a good opportunity to, you know, talk bigger picture, because when camp starts, we are going to be focused on the nitty-gritty, what happens each day, what the developments of the roster are, who's playing well, who's struggling, et cetera, et cetera. So one of the things I always like to do about this time of year is do a few offbeat items. And if you've been a Locked On Rockets listener since our formation back in July of 2016, well, first off, thank you. But secondly, you may remember this time last year, in addition to, you know, our general interviews about the season going out around. And the other day, if you haven't heard, we did have a great interview with Matt Jackson, longtime Houston sports voice, about Tillman Fertitta, the owner-to-be of the Rockets once the sale from Les Alexander officially gets complete in the next 4 to 6 weeks. So we do a lot of bigger picture things this time of year that there aren't any games. But another angle that we covered last year, and I'm happy to bring back, is a Rockets fantasy preview. Because I know a lot of you guys do play fantasy basketball, and if you don't play fantasy basketball, well, then you may gamble and have certain prop bets on the team or players. So what I do for this show is basically break down the team purely from a statistical perspective. We'll also go into a few other things, such as over-under lines, basically anything to help you from a numbers point of view. And for that show, it's a co-branded show across this Lockdown Podcast Network. Of course, we have shows for all the NBA and NFL teams. But in addition to that, we have Lockdown Fantasy Basketball and Lockdown Fantasy Football shows. The basketball version of that, Lockdown Fantasy Basketball, is hosted by Josh Lloyd. He's on Twitter at redrock_bball, but he's a great follow based out of Australia, but a very highly intelligent, analytics-based guy. One of my favorite follows, just a joy to talk basketball with, but also very insightful. He's got his own statistical models, and having talked to him a lot the past few weeks, I know he is very bullish on not just the Rockets from a fantasy standpoint, but the Rockets from a team standpoint as well. He is really buying in to what the Rockets have done this, well, not just this offseason, but the past two off seasons. So I talk with Josh every September to kind of get a lay of the land as far as what to expect from the Rockets from a numbers perspective. And I just got done in the last few minutes wrapping up a show, a joint show for his Lockdown Fantasy Basketball, but also to be brought here to you on Lockdown Rockets. So without further ado, here is my chat with Josh about fantasy expectations for your Rockets entering this upcoming 2017-2018 season.
Welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd, and as always, you can find me on Twitter at redrock_bball. We are back with another season preview podcast. This one has been requested by many people asking when we were going to be covering this team, and it is, of course, the Houston Rockets. So to get into everything, the much-awaited season preview of the Houston Rockets, I am joined by the host of the Locked On Rockets podcast, and that is Ben DuBose. Ben, how are you?
Doing well. How are you, Josh?
I'm good. It's good to have you back on the show to talk about this team who was fantastic last season, has got probably higher expectations and higher hopes this season, and a significant amount of question marks, especially from a fantasy point of view. So we've got a lot to talk about, and we'll start with the biggest point of all, I think, and that is the addition of Chris Paul in the offseason via that trade with the Clippers. Paul comes in, he'll start in the backcourt with James Harden, and the question that I think everyone in the NBA world wants to know, and everyone especially in the fantasy world wants to know, is how these guys are going to fit together. Do you have any level of concern that it's going to be a disaster? I don't personally, but do you have any level of concern on that?
No, I don't. I think it's that angle is overblown by folks who I don't think are that aware of James Harden's particular situation. James Harden ran the show last year. He got all the touches. He was the guy driving the bus from a point guard perspective. And yet he was the guy who for months, if you believe the reports, and I certainly do, going back into the season, was specifically recruiting Chris Paul. It's not like the Rockets are forcing this and forcing these two players who don't want to be together. Because if that was, you know, that's the only way I could see a disaster, if the two players don't want to make it work. In this case, James Harden, Chris Paul, they pretty clearly want to make it work. And from Harden's perspective in general, I know people fixate on how ball dominant he was last year. Will it be an adjustment? Sure it will, but I think they learned the hard way in the playoffs that it's an adjustment they need to make. Because I think you could certainly see down the stretch of the season, and especially Game 5, Game 6 against San Antonio, there was a cumulative physical toll that I think all of those touches, all that usage eventually took on James Harden. And so I think they know, especially in a league where the Warriors have Kevin Durant, Stephen Curry, Draymond Green, et cetera, then you need a secondary, well, not a secondary creator, a second all-star level creator if you truly want to be a contender in the modern NBA. So I think there'll be some, adjustment pains. I think that's fair to expect anytime you put two ball dominant players together, but I think they both want to make it work, and I think they both need to make it work. So ultimately, because they have the right attitude, then I think the odds are pretty good that they're going to figure it out.
We know that James Harden averaged over 11 assists per game last season, and Chris Paul's been one of those guys who's been a consistent double-digit assist player. Didn't get there last year, just at 9.2. We'll talk about the impact on Harden in a sec, but just with Paul, Mike D'Antoni runs a really tight rotation, so he doesn't go 10 deep, he doesn't go 11 deep. He gives his players, you know, more minutes, and Chris Paul was under 32 minutes per game. Yes, he is advancing in age. He's 32 years of age at the moment. Do you see him, or do you see D'Antoni ramping his minutes up this season, or because of his advanced age, you see him maybe keeping him at that 31 level from last season?
I think that 31 to 32 level is a reasonable expectation. I really don't see at age 32, especially with some of the fatigue problems that the Rockets seem to encounter in the playoffs this past season, I don't think they'll force it. I think they're aware of what his age is. And of course, even though he's only under contract for 1 year, the Rockets certainly look at him as a player that they plan on keeping for the remainder of his career. So I don't think they're going to risk him breaking down. I think they feel pretty good about that three-man backcourt of Chris Paul, James Harden, and Eric Gordon. And because you have Eric Gordon, even if, say, you have Harden at 36 minutes, I think they'd like to cap Harden at about 36, ideally. Then you have Chris Paul at about 32, and that leaves somewhere around 28 to 30 minutes for Eric Gordon. So I think you'll have a tight rotation that fits in, as you said, with what Mike D'Antoni historically likes to do anyway, which is a 8 to 9 man rotation. He rarely likes to extend it to 10 or 11. That's generally when it's forced by injuries. Otherwise, he's pretty comfortable playing that smaller rotation. And I think having a guy like Eric Gordon that's that proven, a veteran that is very comfortable in the system, I think that should make it pretty easy to limit Paul's minutes to, I'd say, probably 32 tops. I really don't think at his age, at 32, that you want to push him much more than that.
Yeah, look, I've got him projected at 32 for this season. I think that Harden might play. He played 36 and a half last year. I've got him down to 35, but if he played 36 again, I don't think it would be too much of a surprise. But yeah, as you said, the load that he carried and the fatigue that did bother him later in the season, it was somewhat of an issue. Now, this is something that I've stressed on this podcast quite a bit when talking about these two guys, because everyone's like, oh, I think you've got Harden averaging too many assists, and Chris Paul's going to take these assists. But, Ben, when I look at this team, there's no one else who gets assists on this team. Like, nobody. It's going to be Harden. It's going to be Paul. And nobody else is going to be initiating things. Like, Eric Gordon had, you know, some moments early in the season, but once Lou Williams arrived, he was at under 2 assists per game. Like, he just didn't handle the ball and didn't create. Ryan Anderson maybe gets 9 assists a season. Trevor Ariza doesn't create. Clint Capella's not getting assists. And none of these guys are getting assists. So all of that playmaking is going to come through these guys for the entire 48 minutes of the game. And D'Antoni has said that we're going to stagger them. We're going to play, you know, one of them is going to be on the court the whole time. So while I do think that Harden is going to, he's not going to average 11 assists, and he probably won't get to double digits, these two guys are just going to dominate the assists on this team, and everyone else will probably be under 2 per game.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I was about to make the same point that you did before you beat me to it about Mike D'Antoni in one of the offseason press conferences committing already to playing one of those guys all 48 minutes. That's really surprising, because in today's NBA, no one wants to commit to anything, especially in the offseason. I mean, maybe right before the season in training camp. So to go outright and say that in July, that we plan all 48 minutes to have one of those two out there, I mean, that pretty much tells you that they view those two guys as the quarterbacks. And aside from those two, they don't really trust anyone else to drive the bus. And I think that's fair. When you look at the composition of the team, as you said, Eric Gordon at this point, especially in his career, he's primarily a shooter and, to a lesser extent, a scorer. Trevor Ariza is certainly not a frequent ball handler in the pick and roll, certainly not Ryan Anderson. So there really aren't that many other options you have from a facilitating perspective. So I would say that, yeah, from an assist column, it's Harden, Paul, and then it's almost nothing other than, I'm sure we'll get to it later, the occasional maintenance games. And if that's the case, you could have a young guy like Isaiah Taylor, like Demetrius Jackson, one of those, you know, small timers stepping into that role and getting a few assists just by virtue of someone has to get them. But by and large, assuming the rotation is healthy, yeah, it's Harden, Paul, and pretty much no one else, I think, from an assist perspective.
People will look at my Chris Paul projection on Basketball Monster and they'll say, oh, you've got him averaging the same assists as last season. But there's a reason for that. I think he plays, you know, maybe half a minute more. But also the fact that the Rockets get another 6 possessions per game as opposed to what the Clippers were getting last season, or 5 to 6. Yeah, we're talking about a team that was first or second in pace, the Rockets. I'm not sure if it was them or the Nets that were first, and the Clippers were down at like 98 or 97 possessions per game. So that extra half a minute, the extra possessions per game, enables him to keep that similar level to last season. Now, if you had to guess, who has more assists per game, Paul or Harden?
Tough question. That's really tough. I'm going to lean to Paul, barely. I just feel like one of the big emphasis we've seen from Harden in the offseason, what limited videos we've had, he's doing a lot more catch and shoot. I think he knows that kind of to make this work, he's going to have to play off the ball more. So I slightly lean to Paul, but I think it'll be very, very close. I think we're talking about probably, you know, certainly less than an assist, maybe less than half an assist in terms of the statistical difference between the two players.
I always love when the guests come on and just confirm exactly what I've got down here. Like, I've got Chris Paul at 9.2 assists and I've got James Harden at 9.0 assists. So
That sounds pretty damn accurate.
Yep. Less than half an assist between those two guys. So, yeah, Harden to me is still a very much a worthwhile pick at number one in fantasy leagues. He was the number one player last year in a shooting guard position, getting an elite shooting guard who averages 9 assists and puts up these numbers. Yeah, look, he's going to have a dip, but he was like 25% better than the number three ranked player last season. So if he gets 25% hit in his production, then he just comes back to the pack. And you can make an argument for any of these other guys at one, and Westbrook, Giannis, KD, Towns, any of these players at Durant at number one, and that's fine. But Harden is definitely still in that mix. And in some drafts, people are just very much like, oh, you can't, he's going to drop off so much, and he falls to 7, he falls to 8. And if you have any opportunity to take James Harden outside that top 4, if you're at 6 and he's there, you just jump all over it, because again, it's not going to be that he's going to go back and average 6 assists per game. Like, it's just not what's going to happen. The pace is up. He's going to do very similar things to what he did last season, and I don't think we should be too concerned about the fall off. As for Chris Paul, he's a solid end of the first round, start of the second round guy. You might want to try and get a big man there if there's one available, but once Nikola Jokic is off the board, I think Chris Paul at that end there is fine. We know he's going to get the high steals, the high assists. He's not going to be a high points guy, so maybe he leads you to a punt point setting, but he's super efficient, and he is totally fine at that end of the first round, start of the second area as well. Now, another guy that came across is PJ Tucker, and I'm not really sure, and you can enlighten me on this, I'm not 100% sure on how we're going to see his role work. I discussed it with Kyle McEwen the other day from Basketball Monster. We're talking about the differences we had in when we were looking at our projections, and Tucker was one of the big ones. He thought Tucker was going to be getting 30 minutes a game, and I said, I think he's more mid-20s. How do you see Tucker fitting in here? Do you think that's going to push this Rockets team to a more small ball unit and play him at the 4, maybe Anderson at the 5, or limit Anderson's minutes in that way? Where does Tucker fit into you?
I think he'll, if the team stays as is, I think he'll definitely limit Ryan's minutes closer to 25 or so. I think there's already been a lot of speculation about playing some small ball four with, whether you consider Tucker or Ariza your four. The point is to have two forwards out there with extreme versatility. Hypothetically, you could play those with any of your two guards, Paul, Harden, and Eric Gordon, and of course Clint Capella or Nene at the center spot. So I think they know that Tucker gives you a lot more defensive versatility than Ryan Anderson, and so depending on the matchup, I think there's a place for Tucker to get certainly mid-20s minutes per game, and on occasion a little more than that. And to your point on Harden earlier, and I think this can play for both Harden and Tucker, keep in mind the presence of a guy like Chris Paul, even if Harden falls off a little bit in terms of his assists, I think you could see an increase in efficiency for Harden based on getting better looks than he's gotten in the past by virtue of having Chris Paul out there. And of course, I think that can trickle down to guys like PJ Tucker as well. So I think across the board, you could see a little bit more efficiency in shooting, especially three-point shooting for a lot of these guys, which could make them viable role players. As far as Tucker in particular, his minutes are tied to something I know that everybody wants to talk about these days with the Rockets, which is, are they going to get Carmelo Anthony or not? I think if they get Carmelo Anthony, that's to the detriment of PJ Tucker. Mm-hmm. He still has a role, but I don't think it's that big, because Carmelo, at a bare minimum, I think if you get him, he plays 30 minutes per game, primarily at that four spot. But if the roster stays as it is now with Ryan Anderson and not Carmelo Anthony, then I think that's 5 or 6 more minutes per game that PJ Tucker can get, because Tucker just gives you so much more versatility than you have in Ryan Anderson. And ultimately, I think that would be to the benefit of, well, to Tucker would be the main guy, but also Luke Bamute, he could steal some of those minutes as well. I think in general, Ryan Anderson's lack of defensive versatility costs them a lot, especially against elite teams down the stretch of last season. I think that's certainly a spot that they're looking to upgrade. Ideally, it would be with Carmelo, but if it's not, then yeah, you'll certainly see the in-house options get a look as well.
I don't think Tucker has really much interest in 12-team fantasy leagues, but his ability to rebound, get steals, get hit some threes, be a decent free throw shooter, if in a 14-team league, can be useful. And if he does play more than the minutes that I've projected him, then maybe he squeezes in as a 12-team guy, but more of a waiver wire type of a player. But he's a really interesting guy, especially for on-court stuff with this team. Now, you talked about Mamute. He comes in as basically PJ Tucker with less offense, and he'll probably play a smaller role, even though he is one of the better perimeter defenders in the league. And it gives D'Antoni, in my opinion, extra flexibility. Like, if we need to go out and really shut people down, then him and Tucker can come in and play the 3-4 for 5 minutes and really lock down that perimeter. Gives them that extra defensive. And they weren't as bad. Like, people think they were the worst defensive team in the NBA last year, and they were nowhere near that. And this is going to, these additions, I think, are going, and obviously Chris Paul too. Yes, you lost Pat Beverly, but adding Paul, Mamute, and Tucker, I think it's going to improve the defense pretty significantly.
Yeah, I would think that as well. It's a team now that has so much more flexibility than in the past. I thought last year, as we said with Ryan Anderson, there was just a lack of options in terms of versatile guys. When they tried to play quicker, when they tried to play with more speed, they could only do that typically going small. And so I think what they gained in terms of spacing ability on the defensive end, they lost in terms of height and bulk. Now when you look at those two guys, Tucker and Bamute, that gives you an ability to play a more athletic lineup without losing so much size. So I think that's going to make them a better defensive team. And then Chris Paul, he's an all-NBA first-team defense guy for a reason. And I think he's actually going to be a lot more of an upgrade on Pat Beverly than folks realize. I'm not meaning this to take a shot at Pat Beverly. I love the guy. He's one of my favorites, both on and off the court. But the thing about Pat Beverly, as great as he looked on ball defense, you could see his highlights were so obvious. And NBA fans think of these moments of individual brilliance he had against guys like Russell Westbrook. And I get it. It's very valuable. However, if you watch him over the course of 82 games, and even over the course of a playoff series, Pat Beverly has a tendency, especially off the ball, to ball watch. He gets caught napping a little bit, and you just don't see him. Quite frankly, it's not possible to sustain that bulldog style that you see him against, you know, in the key moments against Russell Westbrook. He's unable to do that over the course of 30 minutes a night, 82 games a season, or his body's going to break down. So that limits his value. As opposed to Chris Paul, who, yeah, he's a good defender, but he's also very cerebral. His instincts are top-notch. I actually think that's going to help the Rockets a lot relative to last year's team, because Paul over Beverly defensively, you just have a much more aware player that's more consistently locked in from minute to minute. So at the guard spots, I think that's going to be an upgrade that not a lot of Rockets fans, and especially not NBA fans, may suspect. They may not suspect it being as large as I think it may actually be.
This just reminds me of arguments I've had with people on Twitter, which is basically the motto of that website, of people telling me that Russell Westbrook's a better defender than Chris Paul. And it's just, it couldn't be further from the truth. People don't realize how good a defender Chris Paul is and has been throughout the entirety of his career, and he is going to be a huge, huge impact on this team. Now, they did bring in a couple of centers. Tariq Black, who used to play for the Rockets, was waived, signed with the Lakers, and now is back with the Rockets. He moves in as that third-string center in the Montrezl Harrell role, who I don't think, and you can correct me here, I don't think he'll really see the court unless it's the days that Nene is resting or it's in blowout-type situations.
Right, and he's going to be interesting to watch because, yeah, there are going to be at least 20 minutes per game. I don't think it's really reasonable for Nene, even if he doesn't have any injuries. Given the grind of an NBA season, I don't think they slate him for more than 65 games tops. So I think there will be close to 20 games in which Black becomes the primary backup center. And maybe in some of those, especially if the Rockets are as good as advertised and, you know, get some blowouts, then all of a sudden he gets a lot of minutes down the stretch that might otherwise go to Clint Capella. So he's one of those guys, he's not worthy of a regular roster spot, obviously, but from a fantasy standpoint, he's worth keeping your eye on when you see in an A maintenance game, especially if it's in an A maintenance game against an opponent that's not that good. Yeah. Then there are going to be some opportunities for Tariq Black to kind of steal 25 or so minutes in a game. And when he does that, he's smooth enough offensively that he can put up some points in a hurry.
He's a good rebounder. He can block shots. He can get steals. He's a high-efficiency guy. So, yeah, he is an interesting guy, but he's not going to be an every-night part of things. They also brought in Joe Chi, their second-round draft choice from last season, the 7-foot Chinese center, who had he had a moment in Summer League where he was just knocking down threes, but I think he sort of struggled a little bit after that. I imagine that he's going to be spending big chunks of time with Rio Grande Valley this season. Do you think that's accurate?
Right. That's my expectation as well. They brought him in so that they could monitor his weight. That's the main thing for him, as it is a lot of Chinese players, is to get him in an NBA weight room and to monitor his bodybuilding on a regular basis. And, of course, they can do that at the G League level as well if they so choose. But I think they see him as a multi-year project. I don't think he's going to be ready to play his first year in the NBA, especially for a team that has, you know, visions on legitimately contending. I'd be very surprised. You can't write it off because all of a sudden, if his three-point shooting turns out to be, I'd say, a 40% level, and then you factor in a guy who's over 7 feet tall and has a ridiculous wingspan, you know, I would never say never just because of the physical traits, but especially you look at his body, and even in Summer League, I think that lack of strength was really exposed. I'd be very surprised if it was this year.
What is interesting, though, is we know Nene, we know his age, you know, where he's up there. Did he sign a 2-year deal or a 3-year deal? I think it was three.
It's a three-year deal. It was originally a four-year deal, if you remember that.
Yeah, that's right. They couldn't do it, yeah, because of the over 38 rule. So, yeah, just the three-year deal for Nene. But Black's on a one-year deal. So I guess they want to see what happens with Joe this season, and he could move into that third-string role next season if they don't decide to bring Black back. But Joe is a guy who has fantastic translations. I know Kevin Pelton really liked him when he came across in the draft. I liked his fantasy translations, you know, points, rebounds, blocking, the threes, field goal percentage, free throw percentage. Like, he can do quite a bit. But I think to expect him to ever become a full-time big-minute starter in the NBA is probably going to be pushing it, but you never know. Like, there is that ability that he has flashed, and his numbers in China looked ridiculous, as a lot of them do, but they looked, you know, especially ridiculous over in China. But he is a name to watch just for the long term to see exactly how he develops. And the other guy, you touched on him already, Demetrius Jackson, who comes in from Boston on a two-way deal, so he won't play really at all with this team. Departures, Pat Beverley, Lou Williams, Montrezl Harrell, Sammy Decker, they've all gone to the Clippers in that Chris Paul trade, and Kyle Wilcher was waived, and he was signed by the Raptors, which I don't think he's going to make their final roster. In the draft, Ben, Houston had one pick, Isaiah Hartenstein. I liked his translations. They looked really good, really high rebounding rate. He looked like he could be a decent-ish type player, but I don't think that he was fantastic over the summer, and he's also a bit of a long-term project, but I do think that he's got some decent upside for a team that doesn't have really any power forward prospects on the squad.
Yeah, I think that both of those guys, Shea and Hartenstein, you're looking at potential fill-ins for backup center. I think long-term, other than Capella, who hopefully they'll be able to get a new deal with after the season. This is his year, 4 years, so he'll be eligible for an extension, or he'll earn a lot of money next summer. But beyond that, I think they're aware of Nene's age. Yes, he signed for 3 years, but he's 35 years old, and reasonably he could retire after any year. Tarik Black is a one-year Band-Aid. I don't think that if Black plays as well as he thinks he can, I think he could be in search of a more regular opportunity. So I think it's kind of twofold. Guys like Hartenstein and Chi, they are high upside guys, but I think generally size is something that this team could use more of going forward. So I think they like kind of having those backup big minutes filled in-house if they could. And then the other thing, as you said, there's just not that many young prospects. They've had to deplete a lot of their resources. You know, you look at a roster this good, well, if you have the second-best roster in the NBA from a talent perspective, then generally you have to lose a lot of your young prospects, as they did, most notably the Chris Paul trade, in which they sent out Sam Decker, Montrezl Harrell, a future first-round pick, as you said. Then, in general, if you want to facilitate any other trades, a.k.a. Carmelo Anthony or anyone else down the line, then you need to develop some in-house young players that might be attractive, not just for your own team, but around the NBA. And so I think they see Hartenstein and Joe Chi. Those are two young players that, for various reasons, international, they probably slipped a little bit relative to what some folks expected at one time or another. But there's a reason those folks were forecast as potential first-round picks at various points in their scouting process. So when you look at Hartenstein and Chi, I think Daryl Morey sees them more as lottery tickets. He sees high upside, and even if there's a little bit more of a short-term risk, because obviously you're converting international prospects with NBA, you haven't seen them in college basketball, et cetera, et cetera. At the same time, they have more upside, and so since you have a system that's largely devoid of players with upside, then I think the hope is that, hey, we've got these two young players, maybe at least one of them will hit, and then down the road, that becomes an intriguing young piece, whether we keep it ourselves or can dangle it in a trade as a cheap asset for someone else.
Yeah, look, I really like Hartenstein and Chi just for their translations look really, really interesting. So I think I place a little bit of value on them on really deep dynasty leagues, just because if they do work out, then the top 100, top 80 potential is there with both of those guys. And that might seem like I'm being hyperbolic, but if they get 25, 27 minutes, they can really rack up stats in limited playing time. It's getting to that level and waiting that time. But you know, they're guys that you would take over some of those other players who were taken, you know, later in drafts, or you might be available in that 40 to 50 type of range. I've grabbed Hartenstein in a couple of deep dynasty leagues, and I'll just wait and see how that works, because there is, I think, yeah, a fair level of upside there with him. Now, we're talking big, so let's get on to, you know, one of my favorite bigs in the entire NBA, and that is Clint Capella, who unfortunately fractured his leg last season. That sort of set him back during the season somewhat, but D'Antoni also did limit him during the season. I thought he was really good. I think he's a perfect fit for this team with Paul now and Harden. His ability to switch guard on the perimeter, protect the rim, have great vertical spacing with Harden, and now it's going to be with Paul as well. Do you think that we can see Capella? You touched on it already. He's going to be a restricted free agent, so he's going to, and this is often when players, you know, take that step forward and look for that bigger payday. Can you see him playing more minutes than last season, and can you see him taking his game to another level? Because I'm pretty excited to see what he can bring.
Yeah, I certainly can. And I think this is a year that he has an opportunity to push for legitimately 30 to maybe even low 30s minutes per game. I think last year they started at that 24-24 rotation minutes per game with both Clint and Nene. And then progressively as the season went along, Clint earned more minutes. He's gotten better with every year. Every year they say that his stamina improves. And so if that takes the next step, combine that with this being a contract year, and there's every reason in the world to expect him to really become a legitimate starting center in the NBA and really a top 10 starting center, especially when you look at his pick and roll game with two guys like Chris Paul and James Harden that run the pick and roll that well. So yeah, I see it kind of be a perfect storm if he can stay injury free, that yeah, this is a guy who can break into, you know, 30 or even slightly above minutes per game and be a real force for the Rockets in the middle. I really liked what I saw of him in the playoffs this past season. It kind of slipped under the radar because he started so poorly in the playoffs. The first four games against Oklahoma City, he seemed to get kind of, boxed out by the physicality of Steven Adams. But late in the Oklahoma City series, and generally for almost the entire San Antonio series, you could see the light bulb coming on. And I like that, you know, it got lost because certainly there was a lot of disappointment for the Rockets, how they finished against San Antonio. But both the finish of the Oklahoma City series and almost the entirety of the Spurs series, Capella got better and better. And you could tell against a San Antonio team that was not that physical up front, you could see Capella playing with a little bit of swagger and saying that, hey, I can control the paint against someone like Pau Gasol or LaMarcus Aldridge. And so he progressively played better and better in the playoffs, even against pretty good competition. So, yeah, he's a guy, great attitude, seems to be an ideal system fit with James Harden and Chris Paul. So I would expect pretty high things for Clint, both from a minute standpoint and a production efficiency standpoint.
In the 11 games that he played in the playoffs, there was only two games where he didn't have multiple blocks. And one of those, he had one block, and the other one, he didn't have any blocks. It was a weird 17-minute game that he played against the Thunder in Game 4. But his block total in the playoffs, 2-4-3-0, 4-2-2-5-2-3-1. Like, so that's, you know, they're dominating your block numbers. It can really, really help you in your fantasy league. He was playing 34. He played over 30 minutes in three of the final four playoff games, and he's got, you know, just monster upside if you're punting free throws. He could be a 14 and 10 guy with two blocks and a steal. I don't think that's obviously the upper side of what he can do. Maybe he can score more points than that if they really start working that pick and roll like crazy. But I think that double-digit rebounds, two blocks, a steal a game on your 60-plus field goal percentage is a realistic expectation for Capella if everything goes his way. But I want to talk about his free throws because it's a weird thing to me. He was, I think, one of the worst free throw shooters in his rookie season. He hit like 18% or something crazy like that, and has never really been able to get it going well. But when he's in the G League, he was able to hit them at 70%. What is it? What's the difference for him? Is it literally just a mental pressure thing? It must be.
It's mostly that, yes. I think his form is actually pretty good. I mean, here in Houston, we've seen guys with broken form at the line. You think of Dwight Howard and Josh Smith. Clint Capella is not that guy. And even in practice, they say he shoots well over 70%. I think the big thing for him is just repetition. He has shown a little bit of improvement, especially to start last year. I think the first little bit, it felt like he was in the 60s. It did tail off a little bit. He did take a step forward. I mean, it's baby steps, but year two, what, 38%? Year three, 53%. I think a lot is repetition because when he was at the G League, he's getting so many free throws per game. Yeah. And ultimately, he trusts his form, and at some point, math wins out. Whereas at the NBA level, a lot of times, you know, if he's only getting, you know, two or four free throws per game, and sometimes that's just because of the minutes and the competitions he's had over his years in Houston, Dwight Howard, Nene last year, who at times was still pretty good. It's one of those things, you only shoot two, and if you have a bad result in that, then all of a sudden that kind of builds on him mentally. Whereas I really think that if he plays 30 minutes per game, then ultimately, I think the form is there and the repetition is there to where he can get it closer to 60. Now, I don't know if it's going to be better than that. That might be asking a lot. I mean, if you're through 3 years, his best free throw shooter percentage is 53. So I think, you know, trusting him to be, you know, a solid free throw shooter, that's too much. But I think it's reasonable given the form, given what we've seen at the G League level, that maybe at least upper 50s to 60, I would say, is a reasonable goal or a reasonable hope if you're a fantasy fan.
I agree with that completely. I think that he can get to that level. Like, yeah, 60 should be a realistic type expectation, and 70 wouldn't shock me completely. It would be a little bit surprising, but it wouldn't shock me. If he's playing those minutes and getting that extra repetition, it's going to work out well. So he's not in Drummond's class, he's not in Jordan's class, he's not in Howard's class, he's probably not even in Gobert and Nurkic, given the amount of attempts that those guys take from the line. I think that Capella is not an automatic punt guy. You probably want to consider it that when you're drafting, and you can, if you have him and Harden together, you could almost be able to recover in that free throw percentage category. He's not a guy that just automatically makes you lose that area. Okay, he could come out and shoot 38% again, but I don't think that that's going to happen. We've seen consistent production. We've seen improvement. It is mental with him. He did it in the G League. He's been able to do it in multiple areas. So I think the improvement's going to be there, and I think it's going to take him out of being that auto punt free throw guy as it continues to improve, with scope to actually become where it's not really even that much of a negative at all. So I'm super pumped for Capella. He's getting drafted to pick 72 on both ESPN and Yahoo. And that's totally fine. If you want to go a little bit earlier into the 60s, totally fine as well. He has got, no joke, he's got top 40 upside. If he plays the 32 minutes that you're suggesting, then he should smash that top 40. He could be a top 35 guy. You're never going to take him there, but that could be a real steal at that point of the draft. You do just need to be careful, because we're not guaranteed of the free throws, but there is that potential for that to even get better and really, you know, provide you some value there. So I'm super pumped to see what Capella can do. Now, we talked about Anderson a little bit earlier on. It just feels like I feel sorry for this guy. Like, so much stuff has gone on in his life, and you know, the neck issues, the back issues, it's rendering him almost statuesque at times out on the court. And I want nothing to do with him in any sort of standard fantasy league. He's outside of a top 150 player. He hits threes, and he can be one of those guys that I reference, like Troy Daniels, like Wayne Ellington, like Nick Young, that you can stream in and get threes, but he just does nothing else. Like, we're talking about a guy that's, you're probably going to average combined steals, assists, and blocks less than 1.5, and shoot a poor field goal percentage, and not get to the line, and not score big points. So there's no value there. He's going at 113 in ESPN. But what do you see with Anthony? You've already said that you see his minutes coming right down. Like, his time as an effective NBA starter, it feels like that contract's not looking good, does it?
No, it's not. It's one of those. The Rockets have had so many things go well for them. People forget the spot they were in July 1st of 2016. Yep. They come off that year 41-41. Everyone's questioning the chemistry. People said it was a bad locker room. People questioned James Harden. And they couldn't even get a meeting with Kevin Durant, despite Durant having a close friendship with Harden. They were rejected by Al Horford, Kent Bazemore. So as good as the Rockets' narrative is now, when you look back at July 2nd last year, and of course that was when contracts were particularly bloated. We've seen that all over the NBA, but the contracts signed the first 2 days of 2016 are disproportionately large. So in addition to Ryan declining just from a general aging curve, you have the fact that he became a free agent at the perfect time. And, it, you know, it's kind of that perfect storm. But back then for the Rockets, they had to get someone to say yes. And so him doing that also allowed them to get Aaron Gordon. And that was the start of them being able to sort of rebuild their narrative to make them attractive down the line, of course, to someone like Chris Paul this summer. So it's one of those things. Is he overpaid? Certainly. And, you know, his being overpaid is the very reason why the Carmelo trade has not happened yet, because he doesn't have that much value to the Knicks, if any, based on being paid $20 million a year for the next three seasons. So the lack of value in that, that's the biggest reason why the Carmelo Anthony stuff is still drug on for 2+ months now. But Ryan, the player, yeah, at this point in his career, and I know it's crazy to say this given the $20 million per year salary, but at this point, he's a decoy. He's not worthless. If you look at some of the plus-minus figures for him last year, the Rockets, the gravitational pull is what Mike D'Antoni and Daryl Morey most frequently call it. It's real. We have a guy who not just can shoot threes, but legitimately is a threat to 28 feet. Yeah. He does make the game, at least offensively, a lot easier for guys like James Harden and now Chris Paul. Now, the flip side is that, as you said, really the story with Ryan is that he's just not the athlete he was early in his career. Now, you go back and look at some of his film, particularly in Orlando, maybe the first year in New Orleans. Look at some of the athletic rebounds he got and the plays he made off the dribble, away from the ball. He could cut. He could fly. Now, that's almost exclusively he's just almost exclusively a three-point shooter. The athleticism, all the stuff he had earlier in his career is gone. Like I said, he's not worthless from a team standpoint because for the Rockets, having a guy who's that good from 27, 28 feet and is 6'10", there are certain matchups where that can be very useful. But I don't think he's going to be every matchup, as we saw a lot down the stretch of the last season. I think there are times when the Rockets would want more versatility. That's where Tucker and Bamute come in, as we discussed earlier. So, yeah, from a fantasy standpoint, it's minimal value because I think the Rockets primarily see him as a decoy. He'll get, you know, three or four threes per game that he makes. And if you need a specialist, that's great. But it's going to be a fairly low percentage because at this point in his career, he is a bomber. He's not going to have much in terms of free throws or more efficient points because he just doesn't have the athleticism to score in traffic, especially around athletic bigs near the basket. So, yeah, from a fantasy standpoint, I don't see a lot of value there. And in terms of defensive versatility, the Rockets have so many more options now that I think that minutes trickles down from what I think he was about 29 to 30 last year. My guess this year would be closer to 25 or 26.
He played only 24 minutes a game in the last month of the season as well, and they started to change things up. So that is definitely something that could continue. Another guy that I think loses not quite as many minutes, but I think Trevor Ariza, with the addition of PJ Tucker, with the addition of Luke Marmute, I think Ariza won't be playing. Look, he played 35 minutes a game last season. I don't think he'll be getting to that level. He also struggled with his shooting in the last half of the season at under 38% over the final 40 games of the year, and just 30% from three. He's 32, he's just turned 32. This is a time when some players really do start to decline, and I get the feeling that it might be the time for Ariza to sort of, well, that decline might have already started at the second half of last season, because historically he's been a great second half player, starts slow and really fires up at the end of the year. But he dropped off in that second part of the year. The shooting went, and with those additions of those other wings there, I'm a little bit concerned about Ariza. I don't think he's going to lose his starting spot. I don't think he's going to start playing 25 a night, but I just don't think they'll have to rely on him for 35 minutes a night, and the shooting was a bit of a concern for over half the year.
Yeah, and I think the guy, along with Eric Gordon, you're going to have to closely track their efficiency. You look back at the Rockets from last year, it was essentially basically a tale of two seasons. They started 31-9 the first half. That was when Gordon and Ariza were at their most efficient. And then, of course, second half of the year, they were 24-18. I don't want to say pedestrian, but certainly not an elite team. And a big part of that was that those secondary guys, they lost their efficiency. And, you know, you can question, were they used too much? Can you change their, you know, the style in which they're deployed? But in the case of Ariza, as you said, yeah, he's 32 years old, and I think 35 minutes per game, I think that minutes toll caught up with him. I think he can still be useful in spurts, but ideally at this point in his career, I think you probably want to cap him at 30 minutes per game. Also defensively, I don't want to say that he's a step slow, but there are certain matchups, especially in the NBA, that's trending smaller and faster with every year, where you may want him as a four more than a three. So that's where having guys like Tucker and Bamute that give you more options, some slight differences in their style of defense, and so that could help you limit Ariza's minutes as well. The first half of the season encouraged me because it shows you, I think, that if he's fresh, then yeah, he's still capable of being a plus three-point shooter in addition to everything he brings you from an intelligence and defense standpoint. But yeah, the finish of the season shows you that, be it a decline or just, you know, his tank running closer to empty, there's a point of diminishing returns for him. So while I think he's certainly a starter, and if you follow the Rockets off the court, you can definitely see that he's extremely close with guys like Chris Paul and James Harden. So I definitely think he'll be a part of the team. But yeah, I think Gerald Morey and Mike D'Antoni are aware that there's a point of diminishing returns for him. And I would say asking anything more than 30 minutes per game from Trevor, now that he's in his age 32, about to turn 33 season, I think that's probably asking for trouble, at least from an efficiency standpoint.
He's a guy that's been drafted at 69 on Yahoo and 76 on ESPN, and to me that's too high. And I know I'll get the arguments from people, and I've already had them saying, oh yeah, but he's had all these multiple top 40 and 9 category league finishes, and everyone who listens to this podcast will know me and my thoughts on turnovers and how much they sway things. In fact, if I look at, like, I've got him as the 94th ranked player for this season. If I put turnovers into that mix, he becomes the 60th ranked player because he's such a low turnover guy. But as I've illustrated plenty of times, yet getting concentrating on turnovers actually makes you lose out on pretty much all the other areas. And if you really are valuing turnovers in a fantasy league to that degree, like it's a 30-point swing in taking Trevor Ariza at pick 60 when there's going to be guys like potentially, you know, D'Angelo Russell at that spot. You might have Alfred Payton's going to be there. There's going to be plenty of wings in that area, or point guards and guards, who I would much rather have over an Ariza, with that age-related decline, the potential minutes drop, and the fact that the majority of his value comes from turnovers, which I just don't value in the slightest. So to me, he is a guy that I probably won't end up with on any of my teams, just for all those reasons that I just mentioned. Now, you touched on it already, Eric Gordon. He was lights out to start the season. Wasn't so lights out the second half of the season. Do you attribute that to the Lou Williams arrival, or was it just a regression to the mean for Gordon? Like, which one are we more expected to see this season, do you think?
I think it's less Lou Williams, because if you look, the decline started a lot more than that. It was really through early January, those first 40 games, when he was at his peak, which was close to 18 points a game, shooting more than 40% from three. And, of course, the last half of the season, he was shooting actually slightly below average, like 32% from three. And Lou Williams didn't get there until late February. So I don't really buy that it was Lou Williams. I think it was a combination. He did have some injuries in January, and of course he's had a lot of injuries over the course of his NBA career. Nothing chronic, but various things. I think he had a foot, an ankle, a back, various things that happened. Apparently the back was caused by walking a little bit different based on the foot. So it was one of those things, you know, that happens over 82 games. But regardless of the reason, yeah, there was a big drop off in the efficiency. And of course that has a ton to do with his value, both from a basketball standpoint and a fantasy standpoint. So in terms of expectations going forward, he's not 30 yet, so it's not the same as Ariza, even though they did have similar breakdowns in terms of their efficiencies over the course of last season. Gordon's story is a little bit different. Personally, what I think happened more with Gordon, he was thrust into a role that, when you look at his injury history, might be a little much. When you look at what he was those first 40 games, he was clearly the number two creator on that team after James Harden. Other than Harden, he was the guy, and when Harden wasn't in the game, you almost had to have Gordon as the facilitator, the guy running the offense. Even if Pat Beverly was the point guard, de facto point guard, which is what he did technically, bringing the ball up the floor, Gordon was the primary guy initiating the offense. So he wasn't playing that much off the ball. He was creating a ton on the ball too, going into the lane, taking a lot of contact, and I think there was a nagging physical toll that took on his body. So I think the hope for the Rockets, we'll have to see how well it works, is that by having one of Chris Paul or James Harden on the floor for all 48 minutes, that's what we said leading off, then he's not going to have to do anywhere near the facilitating he did a year ago. That should make his usage become a little more friendlier in terms of letting him do what he does best, which is spot up for three, play off the ball. So maybe that helps his body stay fresher, and by virtue of that, he gets more efficiency. That's the upside. That's what you hope for. The downside is that last year, he basically finished all the games. It was easy to do that. Whereas this year, it's not going to be as easy. Now, certainly he'll still finish some, but there are going to be some matchups for Chris Paul, James Harden, Eric Gordon that might be a little bit small. And you have more defensive options, not just Ariza, but guys like Tucker, Bob Mute, as we discussed earlier. Maybe it's a random game where Ryan Anderson gets hot. But because the Rockets are a deeper team, it's not going to be to where Eric Gordon is always automatically on the floor in the last 6 minutes of a game. Now, I think he will be more often than not, but I think there are enough options now. And, of course, you have two Hall of Fame backcourt players in Paul and Harden to where it's not a guarantee. So I guess that's where I am on Gordon. I would say largely I'm a little more optimistic because I do think his usage will be better for his body than it was a year ago. But I would have a little bit of caution because he's not going to be guaranteed those final 6 minutes per game that he got last year, just because the Rockets have a much deeper and more flexible roster.
I agree that he's probably going to be a little bit overdrafted this year. He's getting picked at 91 on Yahoo and 95 on ESPN, and he finished the season as the 91st ranked player. So that's assuming that he can do basically exactly what he did last season, which I don't think that he will be able to. Again, his assists, he averaged 2.5 assists per game last year. He's going to drop. We saw that already in the second half of the year. The three-point shooting and the field goal percentage dropped significantly. 32% three-point shooting for half a season is not good. It's just that he was shooting like 40% or whatever it was for the first half of the year. He is more, he's like Anderson, he's really just a three-point specialist. He's not a positive contributor in any other category. He's sort of right on average for points, and that's fine, but I'm not taking that guy in the top 100 in most cases. If he slides outside, I'm all for it, but I don't see the upside there on Gordon, and I don't even see him being able to achieve that level, that, you know, top 90, top 95 type of number for him this season, because it will require him doing what he did last season, and that would mean, you know, improving over what he did over the last 40 games, and with the addition of Chris Paul there as well, that is a concern. Now, we talk about Beverly's gone from this team and Decker's gone. What do you think of Troy Williams as another shooter? Because PJ Tucker and Luke Marmute, they come in as backup wings, but they're not really adding to the shooting in that second unit. Where Williams, I thought he was impressive in summer league. He had some moments late last year after coming across from Memphis. Do you think that he can step into a larger role this season, or do you think the Rockets are counting on him stepping into a larger role?
I don't think they're counting on him stepping into a larger role. I don't think he'll be in the rotation when the season starts. I think the Rockets are actually a little bit surprised with how well he played in summer league. And of course, that secured him a roster spot going back. But they're just so deep at those wing spots that it's tough to see him carving out minutes unless you have a lot of guys who are abnormally cold at one time. I will point out that, you know, Ariza, Tucker, Bamute, none of these guys, even Gordon last year, you talked about how he shot 32% in the second half of the year. You know, if a lot of guys are cold at one point, then could they call on Troy Williams the same way, say, they called on Troy Daniels off the bench a few years ago in terms of somebody get hot at a given time? Sure, they could. I think they have so many more proven options in front of them that it would take injuries for him to get minutes. Now, I do think there's a case to where the Rockets are a team, you need to be very aware of the rest factor. I mentioned in the backcourt, the option, because you only have three backcourt players. So if Chris Paul or Eric Gordon, if one of them is getting a maintenance game, then it's pretty easy to see someone like Isaiah Taylor or Demetrius Jackson potentially getting randomly 25 to 30 minutes on a given night. Then you could see that at the forward spots as well, because a lot of these guys, Ariza, Ryan Anderson, Tucker, these are all guys who are, you know, 30 or older. So you're looking at guys who are fairly advanced in NBA years, and the Rockets are very aware that they're trying to build for the playoffs, and especially after the way things ended against the Spurs, I think they are more aware of the fatigue factor than ever. So while the backcourt's going to be the easiest way for someone like, Taylor or Demetrius Jackson to steal a 25 or 30-minute game here or there, you can't run it off of the forward spots as well. And when that happens, I think that's a spot that Troy Williams could shine, because you look back, one of his really big games down the stretch of last year, I think he had five or six threes, was a game in Phoenix, and it was the game that Harden and several other guys, I think Harden, Ariza, someone else, all sat out. It was one of those, well, someone has got to be there to take the shots. And sure enough, Troy Williams was, and he had a random game in which he scored more than 20 points and led the Rockets to a victory. So it's one of those, I wouldn't count on him as a regular contributor. I certainly wouldn't draft him. But he's a guy that, if he's on waiver wire, I would stay aware of what the Rockets do in terms of when those veterans get maintenance. And if the right combination gets maintenance, then yeah, he could step in out of nowhere and have a game where he, you know, plays 30 minutes and scores 15 to 20 points, because he does have that kind of athleticism and shooting.
I think there's a chance that he's the 10th man on this team, and D'Antoni likes that 9-man rotation, but I think he could be the 10th guy here. So if they do go a little bit deeper, he can get that extra run there. The other guy that I'm interested in is Isaiah Taylor on those games where Paul, who, you know, you always got to factor in rest. You have to factor in injury, I guess, with him as well. And I think Taylor is the guy, and you can correct me if you think something different, I think that he'll be the guy that steps into, you know, a small role in that sort of situation. The other point guards, we've got Jackson, but he can only spend 45 days with the team, and Bobby Brown, who just seems to be there as a team cheerleader, basically. it has to be Taylor that steps into that, you know, as that, you know, nominal third point guard.
As is, absolutely. I think he's more a facilitator than Jackson is. And, of course, there's the 45-day issue with Demetrius. Bobby Brown has said, yeah, he's basically into the bench guy. Now, he can score points in a hurry, but I think it's pretty clear that they would rather, if Paul's going to be out and you're looking at someone for 30 minutes per day, they would rather someone that has a little bit more developmental potential than Bobby Brown does. So I think that's where Taylor comes into play. Certainly, if things change, the one word of caution I would always throw out there regarding Taylor is that if the Knicks ever, you know, come back to the table as far as a Carmelo Anthony deal, then to me, Taylor is a pretty obvious candidate for someone that could get moved as a young player that doesn't make much money and does have considerable upside. The Rockets like him a lot. But assuming the roster stays as is, I agree. Amongst those guards, especially guys that can play point guard, he, to me, has by far the best upside. I thought he played very well in summer league. I think he averaged, what, over 8 assists per game, but he did a great job of limiting the turnovers as well. And so he looked like someone who's capable of stepping in and, you know, running an offense for a winner. He did not look overwhelmed by the moment at all. And so I think that's something that the Rockets, you know, because if you rest Chris Paul or he gets hurt, because let's be real, most of the seasons he's had some injury where he's missed 10 to 15 games, then I think he's the kind of guy, a very cerebral player, that I think the Rockets like. And I think long term, you know, they're aware, as you said earlier, it's kind of a theme that they've had to give up a lot of their young assets. So I think it kind of serves them two purposes. I think, A, he can help them more now from a facilitating standpoint than a Bobby Brown. And B, if you have minutes that you're going to play and you're not going to be at your best anyway because Chris Paul is out, then why don't you use those minutes on a guy who's also a strong developmental candidate? And I think Taylor, by what we've seen at the NBA level and certainly at the G League and Summer League, is a guy who, you know, give him 2 or 3 years and he could be a very productive NBA player.
Yeah, I agree with that. So he is a really interesting deeper league sort of a target, and he'll have some spot moments where he is quite useful. Now, there's one guy we haven't talked about on the roster, and that is Chinonu Onwuakwu. Where's he at? Because I get the feeling that that Joe could leapfrog him in the center rotation this year. He struggled. I thought he struggled at Summer League a bit. Like, where's he at, do you think?
Yeah, it's going to be a big year for him. The Rockets don't ever play their young bigs that much. They look at him as, you know, it's a multi-year project, but you just didn't see the offense come along much at all. And even defense, he graded out very, very well in terms of the scouting models based on his time at Louisville, but what little we saw at the NBA level last year and in Summer League. Now, in Summer League, he did turn an ankle very early, and so that could have been a role. But his awareness didn't seem quite as good as I would have expected for a guy that graded that high. And so you combine that with his inherent limitations offensively, and I would say at least at the moment, it just seems like Hartenstein and Shi might have more upside. And of course, they, you know, they're all bigs. Now, granted, it's easy to say that Hartenstein and Shi have more upside because it's the shiny new toy thing. You know, there's always the unknown, whereas Onwuakwu is a little bit more of a known quantity. So it's easy to say right now that, hey, Hartenstein and Shi might have more upside because we really haven't seen them that much in terms of even at the G League level, let alone the NBA. But, I would say he's got to put up this year if he's going to hold his spot in the organizational hierarchy, because certainly Hartenstein and Shi, there's a reason that those guys at various points in their careers have been seen as potential first-round NBA prospects, very talented guys, more smooth offensively. So I would say this year, then you combine the fact that the Rockets went out and got a Tarik Black. I actually thought the Tarik Black signing spoke a little bit to them not really being convinced on Onwuakwu, because if you really liked Onwuakwu, then going into his second year, why not try and give him that role as kind of that fringe third center who's not even in the rotation most nights, but 15 to 20 minutes per game when Nene gets his maintenance. Kind of the same thing we're talking about with Isaiah Taylor at the guard spots.
Yep.
I know Chris Paul isn't going to get the same maintenance that Nene is in terms of games, but in terms of minutes, certainly there's an opportunity. And so I think if Onwuakwu had played really well at the G League level, and especially in Summer League, then I don't know if they spend the biannual exception. Because before that, if you go back and look at Daryl Morey's comments in early July, a few days before they signed Tarik Black to that, and that was also before the Summer League, he actually said that he, on a podcast with Bill Simmons, that he did not anticipate using that biannual. He mentioned holding it over into the regular season because it could give them more buyout options. We saw the Rockets actually use the biannual 3 years ago to get Josh Smith. That's how they were able to get him when he was cut by the Pistons after he was on that massive deal. So the biannual can be lucrative. The Rockets are also going to be up against the luxury tax this year. They're actually only about $7 million off the hard cap. So I don't think the Rockets would spend money just to spend money. If they felt like they could get that third center replaced, if they could see, you know, second string on occasion, if they could fill that in-house for a guy making $1 million or less per year, I think they would have done it. I think the fact that they had to go outside to get Tarik Black, I think tells you that Onwuakwu is not a guy who's probably ready to play minutes this year. And long-term, even at the G League level, he's going to have to produce this year, because certainly Hartenstein and Joe Chi, those are two guys that have more talent offensively, and they're going to be pushing him pretty hard for those backup big minutes.
Who is your breakout candidate, and why is it Clint Capella?
Why is it Clint Capella?
Yeah, why is it? No, it can be whoever you want. But to me, he's my breakout candidate. Yeah. I really love him. So tell me who yours is.
Yeah, it's got to be Clint. I mean, that's so – it's too easy, I feel like. But you could he's been steadily growing throughout last year. And then you combine what was a pretty encouraging playoff performance. I like it. You mentioned his blocks per game, his rim protection. That was an issue early on for him in the season. There were some folks that questioned what he was in terms of a defensive presence. I thought that got better, especially against the Spurs. You would like to see him command the basket around guys, especially that aren't that physical, like Pau Gasol and LaMarcus Aldridge, and by and large, I thought he did that. Problems Rockets had against the Spurs, well, it wasn't the interior. It was the perimeter guys running into what seemed like a fatigue wall late in that series. And you combine all of Clint's natural gifts, great work ethic, great pick-and-roll player. Now you add Chris Paul, which puts even more premium on pick-and-roll. And you combine all of his normal gifts with the fact that it's year four, a contract year, and, you know, I'm not saying he wouldn't be motivated otherwise, but certainly there always seems to be that extra gear when a guy's about to get his first huge paycheck. So, yeah, combine all of that, and he's the easy pick. Other than him, I don't really – it's also easy because I don't really see a true breakout besides him. Other than Clint, I think a lot of these guys either are what they are when you look at role players. Eric Gordon, Trevor Ariza, Tucker Bamute, you pretty much know what they are. Or, and then if you look at someone like, of course, there's Harden and Paul, two superstars, they are what they are. And then, you know, you look at other guys like Ryan Anderson, they're actually declining a little bit. So when you look at the rotation, Capella is the only true, I would say, upside guy in terms of this guy might make a huge leap forward. Now, there's some smaller time guys, as we discussed, you know, the Isaiah Taylor tier, Demetrius Jackson, Troy Williams that might have a big game here or there out of nowhere. But in terms of the regular rotation, yeah, Clint Capella is the clear breakout.
In terms of looking at value fantasy guys, I think Capella's that guy there. I said he's going at pick 72, but he could have top 50, top 40 type upside. You know, Harden and Paul, there's a little bit of value there. You know, Harden's going at 4 on Yahoo. No problem with him at 1, 2, or 3. So there's a little bit of value there. But more with this team, we look at the guys who are bust candidates. And Ryan Anderson and Eric Gordon really stand out to me. Anderson at 113 and Gordon at 91 or 95. They just seem way too high, especially Anderson, when I don't think he should be drafted in any standard leagues. But I could say Trevor Ariza, I guess, is a little bit of a bust candidate, given he's getting picked inside the top 70 on Yahoo, and I just think that is too high, considering all the factors that we discussed earlier with him. One last thing before we head off, Ben, is the Vegas over-under. We're at 55.5. I've got a fairly strong feeling on this one, but I want to hear whether you take the over or under.
I take the over. I really don't see... The Western Conference, it's going to be better than it was a year ago.
Yep.
But I don't see it being so deep that the Warriors are the only 55-plus win team. I think there's going to be someone else in that 60-win range. And to me, the Rockets are that team. I don't think the Spurs had a good offseason at all. I think Minnesota, it's a nice talent base, but they have a long way to go from a maturity standpoint. I think they're certainly a playoff team, but I think the expectations for them to get to the low to mid-50s, that's probably asking a little much if you're thinking that. The Thunder with Paul George, perhaps, but I don't know that the Thunder with Paul George really closes the gap that much more than with the Rockets, who added Chris Paul. So I just kind of see it as a matter of attrition. The Western Conference is better, but I don't think it's good enough to where you're going to have the Warriors and then a bunch of teams all max low 50s. I think there's going to be someone else. The number two team in the Western Conference is going to end up with 58 to 62 wins. And as I look at West, the Rockets, I'm not going to say they're guaranteed to be the second best team, but they seem to be the best candidate from a roster standpoint to be that. And I just don't think the Western Conference is so good that you're not going to have a team better than 55 wins in that two slot.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think it's a pretty strong over given the way this team looks. And if they won 60 games, I don't think anyone would be overly surprised. I think a lot of the Vegas lines are pretty spot on. There's a few that are a bit egregiously high or egregiously low, and I think this one's in the low category. And I do really like going the over here for Houston. Ben, let us know what's happening on Locked On Rockets and anything else that you want to give a free plug to.
Yeah, sure. For anybody that's not following me already, you can do it on Twitter at Ben Dubose or at Lockdown Rockets is the show. We generally do about 2 episodes per week now because it's the off season. But when training camp starts on Tuesday the 26th, we'll go back to being a daily show. And yeah, these days, you know, it's for almost everybody in the NBA, it's a pretty quiet time. But with Houston, everybody wants to know about Carmelo Anthony thing. It seems like there's some new rumor from some this week. It's, of course, Chris Paul and James Harden going to New York to play basketball. with Carmelo in the gym. And so it seems like every week there's some new Carmelo rumor. Is it going to happen or not? The bottom line is we're not really going to know until a couple of days before camp. That's when there's going to be that kind of deadline pressure for the Knicks. Are they truly willing to bring him to camp? So whether it happens or whether it doesn't, I think that's going to be the story for us the next couple of weeks, is seeing, do the Knicks blink, or are they willing to take Carmelo to camp? And if that's the case, then the Rockets bring Ryan Anderson back, who knows that he's been shopped pretty heavily this entire offseason. So either way, it's going to be an interesting dynamic to watch over the next 2 weeks as we get closer to camp. And so, yeah, if you want more on that, certainly tune in Locked On Rockets on Twitter. And, of course, well, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Audioboom, pretty much all the same places that they can find your show, Locked On Fantasy Basketball.
Yeah, so go and subscribe to both of our shows and give us a 5-star review. It's a great way to help the show, get it more visible, and to show your support of this show, of Ben's show, and the entire Locked On Podcast Network. Ben, thank you for joining me.
Sure thing. Glad to be on.
We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone.
That's Josh Lloyd. If you're not already following him on Twitter, as he said, it's at @RedRock_Bball. Always love talking hoops with him. Great voice across basketball, not just for fantasy, but really a very insightful guy who understands the landscape of the league as a whole. So hopefully you guys enjoyed that chat and maybe learned a little bit too. I certainly always enjoy chatting with Josh because he's one of the smarter basketball minds that I know. So yeah, if you're not already following him, @RedRock_Bball on Twitter is where you can go. And for me, as I said, @BenDubose. As always, appreciate you guys for listening and tuning in. I think that'll do it for our fantasy show. But of course, in the days and weeks ahead, we're going to have plenty more basketball talk. Certainly this week, I know Carmelo Anthony is on the forefront of everyone's minds. So stick with us in the days ahead, and I'm sure we'll have a lot more on that front. Also, as I said earlier, if you haven't checked out our interview from last weekend with Matt Jackson, veteran Houston sports insider, I think you would really enjoy that. Spoke to him at length about Tillman Fertitta, new Rockets owner, and got a lot of insight about what he might do once he officially takes the reins in the next 4 to 6 weeks from Les Alexander as owner of the Rockets. So again, that's in our archives here at Locked On Rockets, Stitcher, iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, anywhere you can find your podcast, anywhere you subscribe, just search for Locked On Rockets, search for Locked On Fantasy Basketball, search for any show across the Locked On Podcast Network, and you will be able to find that or any of our other 200-plus episodes since our founding in July 2016. So, once again, I'm your host, Ben Dubose. Appreciate you guys for listening. Hope you go out and enjoy the rest of your week, and we'll be chatting again in just a few days.